Hello and welcome to Virago Voices Podcast. This is the fourth episode of season four of the podcast. For those of you who are new to the podcast, Virago Voices is all about spotlighting inspirational women and their stories to empower and inspire other women and people. So first off, happy bank holiday weekend. I've had a lovely weekend filled with sitting out in the sunshine, going for nice walks, baking. I've actually just finished baking some banana bread, which is an actual lockdown throwback. And of course, doing my favourite, reading. At the minute, I'm reading an amazing book, which I actually really want to tell you all about. It's called Divided: Racism, Medicine, and Why We Need to Decolonise Healthcare. And it's by Annabelle Soemo, who I was actually lucky enough to meet a few weeks ago at my diploma ceremony. And I think I posted about it on my Instagram. It's an incredibly thought-provoking book into the colonial past of medicine and raises a lot of issues that hopefully we will see changing in the next few years. Definitely worth a read. As I said in my last few episodes, I'm a total bookworm. And if you didn't already know, I'm always happy to talk about book recommendations on my socials and also love getting book recommendations too. So when I say this episode is very exciting, I mean it, because it brings together my two loves, books and women's health. So, back to the podcast. If you haven't listened to episode one, this season is entitled Inspirational Women, and I will be asking my inspirational women the three questions that I normally ask and a little bonus question. So without further ado, today's podcast is entitled Virago Ingrid. I met Ingrid through LinkedIn, where she reached out to me due to a shared interest in women's health, which you'll hear all about in this episode. Ingrid is a change maker. She is a women's health physical therapist, speaker, and most importantly, author of the book, The Musculoskeletal Mystery: How to Solve Your Pelvic Floor Symptoms. Ingrid is passionate about providing individuals with the knowledge that they need to get proper pelvic care and for everyone to realise that pelvic conditions are common but not normal. From Ingrid, I have been reminded of the importance of health education. These small things, like this podcast or even just a post on Instagram about a condition, can really make an impact on someone's life. And we will talk more about this in the podcast. So I hope you enjoy my conversation with the virago that is Ingrid. Hi Ingrid, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you. And thank you for having me on the podcast. I'm so excited to talk about different things.
No, it's my absolute pleasure. So we met via LinkedIn, isn't that right?
That is correct.
Yeah, and I'm very excited to have you on. So thank you for saying that you come on the podcast. Could you just introduce yourself to the listeners for me, please?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Ingrid Horn-Hernandez. I'm a pelvic PT. So I've been a physical therapist for almost 40 years, and I've been a pelvic PT for about 27 years. And you can see there's a big span there. And that's because when I started, there really wasn't so much anything even called women's health and now called pelvic health. So we treat a wide variety of patients that have pelvic conditions, everything from incontinence to constipation to prolapse. And it's been an exciting journey for me to see the change from, you know, when I started, when there wasn't much known, to now, and we have a residency program, and it's just a really, really cool progression, and so enjoy helping people kind of get back to their life.
Amazing. And very excitingly, you've written a book. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah. So one of the things that happened, so the book is called The Musculoskeletal Mystery: How to Solve Your Pelvic Floor Symptoms. And that's a mouthful. But it's because so many of my patients and practitioners did not understand how the musculoskeletal system was even involved in all of these different conditions that we treat. And it was such a mystery to people. So I was frustrated because it took patients 5, 10, and even 30 years of suffering with conditions before they were referred to see me. And I thought, What a shame. These people are living with these conditions and they're getting worse and they don't know where to turn. They don't know where to go. They don't know what to ask. So I said to myself, I really need to write something that people can have the information in their hand. So if it's a patient, wow, I just learned about my body and I know who to ask. There's a work about a team in there, how to put a team of practitioners together. What does physical therapy mean? What would you get in a treatment? So a practitioner can understand it and then say to their patient, look, there's this great resource. We know where to send you for these things. And this is what's going to happen. So the patient's not afraid to go either. Because sometimes a practitioner says, yeah, I know where you can go. But the patient's like, what is that? And I don't think I want to do that because they don't understand it, right? So my hope was that the book would educate people, empower people, that they would help other people. So not just the person reading the book, but they would help their loved one. And everybody would get on the same page a lot quicker and people get help much quicker. That was really my goal with the book, for sure.
And I definitely think you met your aims, because the book just sums up exactly what you've set out to do. It's education. And I mean, I learned so much from the book itself. I'm a healthcare professional and I've done anatomy and I still learn lots, because I think it's so interesting to get it from a pelvic PT perspective and someone who's an expert in the field. And I think we're really bonded in the fact that we love empowering people through education. And that's really what I got from the book, was that the more you know, the more empowered you're going to be. And I think that's amazing.
Oh, thank you so much for saying it. That is, then I know that I'm doing the right thing. You know, if you're saying that, that's just that, you know, warms my heart to know that we're going in the right direction with that.
No, definitely, definitely. And I think, you know, what you're saying about a lot of people who've lived with conditions for a long time and feeling that that's just kind of, you talk about a lot about that in the book, that they kind of think, well, that's just me. Now, I've got incontinence or I've got prolapse, and that's just the consequence sometimes of childbirth or being a woman. And you're very much saying, no, don't live with it. Don't suffer in silence. And I think that's a rhetoric that happens a lot in women's health. I don't know if you agree with that.
So I feel, particularly in women's health, there's a myriad of reasons. I mean, we could probably talk for hours just on that. But I think women sometimes are afraid to step forward. And then they're told over and over again, you're going through menopause, you're pregnant, you're postpartum, which actually is the fourth trimester. We expect you should live with that. You know, that would be something that every woman goes through. Instead of saying, well, we understand that you're having these symptoms and issues, but there's someone who can help you with that. There's someone who can do something about that. There's someone who can teach you how to take care of yourself. And pelvic PTs, really, that's what we look for, is getting people back to function and helping them help themselves. So back to that empowerment, is a physical therapy session is an empowerment session. I kind of look at it that way. So we do treatment, but we help someone understand how to help themselves. So I think, unfortunately, women are more like in that category of getting this, just live with it, honey. Painful sex, with menopause, expect it. I'm like, no, please don't. There's treatment for that, right? So, you're 100%, you're spot on with that. It is an unfortunate thing, but we can change it. That's the positive, is we can change that.
Exactly. And I love that you empower healthcare professionals through education, because I think it's still sadly an area that healthcare professionals don't get taught on enough, is women's health. And if they don't know where to refer people, they will just brush it off as, it's something I don't really know that much about. So just, it sounds like something you should live with, rather than saying, I know pelvic PT is the place to go, or, physio rehab and things like that. So that education spans both for patients and for practitioners. And that's what I loved about the book.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I was so glad to be able to bridge the gap. Again, that's what I feel like. I live my life in that gap, trying to get, the two parties together, so everybody speaks the same language. And that's really important, to get everybody speaking the same language and just feeling comfortable, because these conditions, they're common. They're not normal. That's the narrative we have to change, is these aren't things that everybody just should say, oh, I'll live with it. We want to empower people to talk about it and make it commonplace to talk about it, but that it's not a normal condition.
Yeah, I love that. Common but not normal. Like, you know, lots of people go through it. It's kind of like painful periods. You know, they are common but not normal. And if you are having painful periods, painful sex, pelvic pain, these are conditions that lots of women and people with women's or female bodies experience, but they're not normal. And if it's something that's affecting your quality of life, then it should be something that you should be able to reach out to your healthcare practitioner to be able to help you with. And I think that's a really key message.
Yeah, 100%.
No, I love that. And I guess, so we've kind of been talking about empowerment through education, and I think that leads me nicely into my first question of the podcast, which is, what is your life goal?
That's more complex than I'd like to. But I think for me, just thinking about that, a goal for me is something that the goalposts may move, right? So in my life, I think my goalposts have been moved by me and they've been moved by other people. So an example would be, I would say when I was growing up and I was a child, one of my goals was to make my parents proud. And, you know, they were immigrants over to the United States in a time period where it wasn't a good time for them to come over. They really had to fight against a lot of things that were happening in their lives. Yet they showed me that they kept working on things, and they individually, you know, whether it was talking to people and showed people who they were as individuals and developed, they had their own business. So I felt like I want to follow in their footsteps and make them proud. So as a child, I think that was an original goal. But then as I grew up and I got married, I felt like, well, my goal is to have a fun, good marriage, you know, something where we're partners. You know, everybody disagrees and has arguments. It's not that, but that your marriage feels like you can grow with your marriage, so to speak. And that was like, I'd have to say that was a big goal then. And then, of course, like the next thing that came along would be as a mom. And thinking about that, when I'd have discussions with other moms, I'm like, my goal is to raise good human beings. Good, you know, human beings that can contribute to the world, so to speak, right? That was a goal. Maybe that sounds simplistic. Maybe that sounds complex. I don't know. But, you know, I thought as a mom, you know, that was important to me. And then the other part of my life is pelvic PT. So as a pelvic PT, my goal is, can I get my patients back to a healthy, comfortable, fulfilling, you know, happy life? It's that big. It's not just a symptom. It's not just one part of it. It's not their pelvis. It's their life. It's their function. So that was a goal, you know, as a pelvic PT, you know, it's a whole nother level to talk about. And then as a presenter, it's like, how do I get my audience to understand what I'm saying? And how do I get them to change their mind thought? So my goal there is, can I get people to change their thought process to help themselves and others? And then the book flowed right into that, is like, can I do that on a big scale? Can I do that around the world where people now are, oh my gosh, I had no idea I could get help for that. Can I change people's lives and thought processes that way? So that just merged into the book. But gosh, if I look at all of those goals together, is I have to go all the way back to my mom who always said to me, if someone gives you something, or you do something with someone, or you're in someone's house, you leave that object, that place, that person better than when you got there. And she always said that. And you know, as a kid, you'd be like, what does that really mean? Do I clean something? But to me, that's a life goal. The life goal is, can I leave the world a better place than when I got here? Right. So, that's why I said it's complex, and those are so many layers. But if I put that together in a nutshell, I think that's what I'd say. Leave the world a better place than when you got here.
Oh, that is such a beautiful answer. I think that answer as well just pulls together everything that you said, you know, having a good marriage, bringing up good human beings, but also making patients have better lives, which is that lovely holistic care that we all aspire to have. And then, yeah, obviously the book enhances that because you're doing that on such a large scale. Like, your book is international, so you're able to do that holistic care aspect on a wider scale. And yeah, I definitely think you're leaving the world in a better place than you find it in regards to many aspects of your life. So what a lovely answer.
I thought, oh my gosh, this is, as it's marinating in my brain, how complex the steps are. But it's really comes back to, I say, my parents, you know, I'm grateful for such a great foundation that my parents gave me that I couldn't ask for better. But I think if you don't necessarily have that foundation, there are other resources and people you rely on that can give you a foundation as well that will help you build yourself as a human being. So we can get it from different resources. I was just so blessed to have it, my parents be that resource.
Yeah. And I guess the other people that you that kind of mention are mentors or kind of role models or teachers and that kind of thing. So I'm very pro having a mentor, and I think everyone should. So if you're kind of feeling that you need some inspiration, just reach out to someone you admire and ask them to be your mentor. That's my kind of advice for people, because I think that, as you're saying, that kind of role model figure in your life is really important.
Yeah, absolutely.
And talking about kind of your parents and your early childhood, this leads us really nicely into the next question, which is what would you tell 16-year-old you?
I think I would say, because you know, I'm an introverted person, and I've had to learn to grow from that. And I was really, really shy. And I would say, don't worry about what other people think. Most people are entrenched in their own life anyway. They don't so much even recognize some of the things that you're saying and you're doing. And if you are always worried about it, you won't do the things that are leading you. And I guess an example I could give you is quite a while ago, numbers of years ago, when I had only just started really stepping on bigger and bigger stages to talk to people, one of my fellow doctors, a gynecologist, said, oh, you know, I'm doing this talk on sexual dysfunction, and I really think you need to take half that talk. I don't need to talk the whole time. I think you need to get up there and tell people. And it was still, to talk about sexual dysfunction, it was still back then, like almost 20 years ago, you didn't hear it that much. And it was for medical practitioners of all sorts. So I said, okay, to her, thinking, wow, okay, I'm stepping out now, you know, talking about this. And it turns out, so I'm thinking, oh, I'll be talking to 30 people or whatever. So I emailed the director of the conference, I don't know, like 2-3 days ahead of time. And I said, can you just give me an idea how many people we're talking to? And she goes, oh, it's well over 300 already, and probably be more than that. And I'm kind of like, oh, 300? So I had to like take a deep breath. And the funny thing is, you know, as always, AV was messed up as I got up on the stage. They couldn't say my name right because it's rather complicated. Oh, no. And all this thing. And I thought to myself, take a breath and start talking to one person at a time. And I did that. I looked at this audience of 300 and literally looked at one person and looked at another. My brain was, you're just having a conversation with them. Take a breath and keep going. And I've kind of now taken that, if I could tell my 16-year-old and anybody else, if you're going to embark on a situation, literally take a diaphragmatic breath and say, what your message is so important. It really doesn't matter how nervous you are. Your message isn't too important to let your nervousness get over or take over, right? So I wish I had known that as 16-year-old, because there's so many things I didn't do because I was so worried. What would someone think, right? So, you know, hopefully that helps people out there too, that through their life, if they have, I have a message, I'm so worried about what someone's going to say about that message that I'm not going to say it, right? Hopefully that'll change people a little bit to realize you can say a lot, right? Not everybody's going to agree with you, which is okay.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's a really lovely message. You know, don't worry what other people think, because I do think that holds a lot of people back. I read this really interesting book recently called Fly Higher. And at the end, the author says, you know, no one's looking at you. You know, everyone's so, as you said, entrenched in their own lives that, you know, say you fall over while you're on stage and you're like, this is the worst thing that's ever happened. This is the worst thing that's ever happened to you, but no one else really cares. They might laugh at the time, but they won't remember tomorrow. But, you know, when you're, it's in your head, you're like, I'm so embarrassed. Like, I'm, you know, and everyone's looking at me. Everyone's like laughing at me. And actually, most people are just trying to survive themselves, which I thought was really reassuring. Right, right.
Absolutely.
So yeah, no one's looking at you, which is quite reassuring actually. I guess don't let fear and nervousness hold you back from the things that are important that need saying. And I love that actually. It's really important. And in terms of being an introvert, because I noticed you kind of mentioned that you're an introvert, do you have any advice to fellow introverts? I'm also an introvert, on how to kind of get yourself past like the kind of fear of speaking on stage, or the kind of how to navigate the world that's kind of, from my perspective, made for extroverts.
Yeah. So it's perspective from outside and inside. So as an introvert, you have as many really awesome things to say as the extrovert. The extrovert kind of gains like energy from being out there and talking and doing things. The introvert is more the one-on-one person, I need a little retrospection, I need a little bit of thought, I need a little reflection. And they do that, and then they come out with wonderful, wonderful things. So I would say anybody who's introverted, you have awesome things to say. And sometimes you have to find the right kind of audience, I'll say, the right place to start, or in a friendly environment. Sometimes my residents, they were so nervous about getting there out there on the stage. And usually by the end, we wanted them at least to do a state level presentation, if not a national. And so we would say, start with an in-service with our own little group where you know the people and they know you. So they're not going to try to eat you up. You know, they're going to listen to you and you're going to be able to answer questions. And you gain that first step of, that wasn't so bad. And then maybe you go to another group. That wasn't so bad. And just like my story about the 300 people, it's like I realized I can talk in front of 300 people if, as an introvert, I bring it back to my strong suit, which is one-on-one, is talking to someone directly and they can hear and they can see your passion. Well, those 300 people can as well, but you just have to learn to shut like all the other outside stuff and say, I'm going to have a conversation with one person. They're going to hear me. And at the end, those 300 people, or maybe 290 of them, heard you, right? And you got your point across as an introvert. So I think the only way for us to overcome is practice, you know, getting in front of small groups and progressively larger groups until we feel I can do that. Or I don't know about traveling, you know, somewhere. Well, maybe I need someone with me at first. And once I've done that a few times, now I'm brave enough to do it on my own. And I now sit and talk next to the person to me on a plane, perfect stranger. I might not have done that 20 or 30 years ago. Now it's like, hey, and you start talking and boy, do you learn the most amazing things from different people, and you learn different cultures and different styles and personalities. And I feel like I'm still an introvert, but I now utilize different skills, and as an introvert, I think I can sometimes give someone that more focused one-on-one, even in a larger group, where an extrovert might not be able to do that. That's okay. Everybody's got their strengths, but turn the introvert into a strength instead of feeling like it's something that holds you back. It really is a wonderful quality. You just need to use it and understand that people do enjoy introverts and learning from them.
Absolutely. And I think actually, if you haven't done a personality quiz or you haven't kind of sat down and figured out what you are, that's really important, because I remember in school or lectures at uni, it was mostly, you know, you get to the end of the lecture and people, you'd see the extroverts in the room and they'd shoot their hands up and have a question. And I remember kind of being like, how do they think of questions so quickly? And by the time I thought of a question, it would be like 10 minutes after the lecture, the lecture would be gone. And I'd be like, oh, damn it, why did I not ask that question? And for ages, I was like, am I just really dumb? Like, why can I not think of questions on the spot? And the more I read into my personality and in being an introvert, I'm like, but because I need that self-reflection, whereas extroverts think as they speak and they'll put their hand up and they'll just say what they're thinking. Whereas as an introvert, I'm like, I need to think this through and I need to come up with a formed question so then I can ask it. And by that stage, you know, the Q&A time is over. But I think understanding that is really empowering. So I think if anyone's not done their quiz or not thought about what they are, it's definitely really helpful because, you know, it will help you in understanding yourself.
Yes, it's vital. It really is vital because you can just grow from it then instead of, like I said, feeling like that's all holding me back. You really want something that helps you grow forward. And if you understand yourself better, you can have that growth for sure.
Absolutely, definitely. So I want to move on to one of my favorite questions, which is, what does being a woman mean to you?
So I think I'll have to say that's layers too, that it's really hard because even as women, we're all different, right? So, but I think what unifies us, maybe what pulls us together. So I think we tend to be the caregiver. There's a tendency. That doesn't mean every woman is, but we tend to be the caregiver, which means we're the person that holds everything together, the glue of the family, whatever it may be. We tend to take on those roles, which I think it's an awesome thing because we can be very enriched. I had to take care of my mom for many, many years. And, you know, people are like, how do you do? And I'm like, I couldn't even imagine doing it any other way. And I felt like it helped me understand things better. It helped me understand what she was going through. You know, so that's kind of the caregiver role. Unfortunately, that also sometimes takes a piece from us that wears us down. So we have to learn as caregivers to reach out. You know, that we need care too as caregivers, that we don't get so far that we can no longer take care. And I would always tell my patients, I was like, boy, I better practice what I preach is, and I call it the oxygen mask analogy in my book. Mm. And I have these little pearls of wisdom in the book just for doing this for years and talking to my patients and learning so much from my patients. I think I learn more from my patients than books, I have to say. But the oxygen mask analogy is if you're on an airplane, the attendant will say, put the mask on yourself and then your child. And a lot of people are like, oh, no, I need to protect the child. But what they don't realize is if you put that mask on the child and you pass out, you get injured, you can't help the child. And if the child panics, they'll take the oxygen mask off. So you need to put it on yourself before you take care of someone else. And that's life. If you don't take care of yourself, you can't take care of others, right? And I think women in particular need to hear that they need to take care of themselves, right? I think we're great educators. I think we kind of can pull things together nicely and have patience to educate. And I think that's a wonderful, wonderful role that women have, both on a very individual level and on a larger level, as large as you want it to be. We have compassion. I think that helps us see a lot of different angles at one time. Sometimes that binds us down and sometimes it helps us kind of resolve things, right? So it can also be a plus or a negative. All these things can be pluses and negatives. And then I think we're tough. We are so tough. Can you imagine carrying another life and giving birth just in itself, taking care of others, having other children while we're pregnant, having a marriage and all the things I talked about goals before. Wow. We're tough, that we can do that many different things in our life. What a great thing. And I don't know if we talk about that enough, as women, that those are so positive. Those are great things and embrace it. That is a woman. That's awesome. It's okay to be a caregiver. It's okay to be an educator. Like, we shouldn't talk ourselves down. We should say, these are awesome things. These are awesome traits we have. Let's share. Let's do that. And let's look at it in a positive light.
I love that. I think I think you've summed it up perfectly at the end, saying, you know, all of these traits that are characteristically female, and obviously taking into account that not all of them, you know, not everyone who's a woman will relate to these, but the majority of women may do. And actually, they're traits that by society, they've been so, you know, they've almost been seen as weakness, what, like compassion or, you know, caregiving. Those are all traits that, you know, aren't valued by society because society values the kind of more classic male traits. But I think we need to take back that power and, you know, see that our beautiful traits as women are so, so important to the world. And, you know, if we didn't have women, we wouldn't have life. So we are very, very, we're essential.
I think the narrative is changing. Yeah. And I think some of this stuff, like what you're doing with your podcast, helps the narrative change. So we can, I think we can impact things positively in this way. It does, it, you know, it doesn't have to be a negative. It doesn't have to be, oh gosh, we need to fight. I think if we are, we constantly kind of hammer away at the idea that these are positives and we have another woman in our life, we encourage them to do things. So your podcast is this, like this great forum of letting women discuss that and talk about it and listen to it. And I think more than women, we need to listen to it. So everybody's on the same page. It's like the education of the book. Everybody's on the same page. It's a big goal to have people understand that everybody's different, everybody's personality, introvert, extrovert. We just talked about a bunch of things that changes people's personalities, and their strengths and weaknesses. And let's use the strengths and weaknesses to become better people. You know, that's how I look at it.
And to, you know, achieve your life goal, which is leaving the world a better place than what we found it in. And actually, if we can do that through small things like, you know, making women's, classically women's traits be seen as positive, then I think that's something we can definitely, you know, say that we've made the world a better place through. So yeah, no, absolutely. And I love that women are so tough. You're so right. You know, we go through labor, we look after children, we fight the patriarchy, you know, we're tough. We are tough. We go through periods every month, which is in itself.
Right. We are tough.
Very tough. Wow. And I just feel like we need to say it. People, you know, people need to understand how tough we are. Because yeah, I mean, periods every month in itself is hard work.
Yeah. And some of the conditions, you know, that I treat, endometriosis and I see things that are more typical, you'll see a higher risk or percentage in women, you know, than you do in men. So I think if we realize, wow, these conditions, they're tough to tolerate. And then to be told, just live with it. You know, my patients are coming with pain with sex. They've been told over and over again, honey, just go have a glass of wine and you'll be fine. And I used to get so angry when I hear that a medical practitioner said that to a patient. And now it's kind of like, I'm not going to get angry. I'm going to educate. We're going to change it. We're going to stop people from saying that because you invalidate what that poor woman is going through, you know, and menopause in particular in the fourth trimester, menopause and fourth trimester time period have such similarities to them because of the changes in hormones that we go through. And then that poor woman in the fourth trimester, she has this young child to take care of on top of it. She may still have a career she's trying to go and keep up with, right? There's a lot going on. And then to be told, oh, honey, you know, yeah, you can expect to have pain after you give birth. Maybe you can expect it, but you can treat it. You can make it better. It doesn't, if you expect it, doesn't mean you say, well, just live with it. How horrible. Like you lose a big part of your life, of your relationship with your partner, if intercourse is painful. Right? And pelvic PT can change that 100%. You know, there's a natural way to deal with it. People think, oh, this is going to be complex. It's not. It's not. It's treating the brain, the pelvic floor, the entire core, everything. Pelvic PTs really treat nose to toes, quite honestly. It's not just the pelvic floor. My patients aren't a pelvic floor. They're a human being. You know? I treat them as a whole, you know, all genders. It doesn't matter.
Exactly. And I think actually you bring up a really interesting point about pain during sex, because I think women aren't validated in the fact that sexual pleasure is a necessity. You know, I think that's kind of, women's sexual pleasure is secondary to male sexual pleasure a lot of the time. And, you know, when you, as you said, you know, women will come in and say, oh, you know, I'm having experiencing pain during sex. And barriers that they've faced even come in to say that to their practitioner are massive, because for so long they probably just put it off. And then to be told, you know, just have a glass of wine or just lie back and think of something else when you're having sex, is literally just reinforcing that your sexual pleasure is not important, and you're just, you know, a vessel for sexual pleasure for your partner, and or you're just, you know, a vessel for reproduction, which is a horrendous rhetoric for women to experience.
Yeah, it's so sad that it's been put on the back burner. And if you think of it, a relationship can get so much better if both understand, you know, no matter who they are, that both understand, and their frustration, then, well, you know, you don't love me, that's why you don't want sex. And the woman doesn't even want to come forward and say, well, I don't want to have sex. It has nothing to do with not wanting it, but it's so painful that I've lost my desire for it. It's no longer pleasurable. And we miss that whole pleasurable component, you know, and we realize, oh my gosh, well, you know, they may say, you know, well, I just don't want to have sex anymore. But the practitioner doesn't go forward and say, well, why do you think that is? Is that pain? Is that just the libido? Is it a hormonal? Is it a, they're like the questions, the next steps of questions don't even come along. And I try to get the practitioners I teach to step out of that comfort zone for them too. How do you talk about sex and feel comfortable in it so your patient feels comfortable? And you know, that sounds funny, but both sides have to feel comfortable. It was very brave of that person to go into that clinician and say, enjoy sex anymore. I'm having pain with sex. Wow, that was brave. Now acknowledge that and say, okay, what are some of the things we can do, right? So a practitioner needs to step up their game and address it from their side too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I guess in your book and from things I've read recently, I've read a lot more about women's desire and how different that is to male desire. And, you know, men will kind of instantly get desire, whereas women take a while to build up to it, and all the kind of foreplay that comes first really impact women's desire and ability to, you know, even be lubricated enough to have sex. And I think that's a really important point, because actually if you're initially just kind of not properly stimulated first, then you may have painful sex, and actually that's very easily treated through foreplay or just using lube, which isn't a failure of anyone.
Yeah. I had this awesome sex therapist that I would refer my patients to, and she would refer to me with this great system. And she once described like the male, you know, preparation for intercourse, and intercourse itself is kind of like this curve that literally goes up and down. And a woman is this very long up and very long down, and we have to kind of try to meet in the middle there somehow. And it opened my eyes when she was talking about that, like, wow, you know. So in counseling patients and talking to patients, there's this difference in physiology in our body. It can work beautifully, but if someone doesn't understand that, or the partnership doesn't understand that, it could be very difficult, right? And that could be something very simplistic to have someone understand that and employ that in when they're working at home with their partner, trying to get to the next step, right?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think understanding your own body and understanding bodies in general is so empowering. And I think your book was really clear on that, which I thought was so great. So if you're interested in reading the book, please go and get a copy. I'll put a link to the UK publisher in the bio of the podcast. But yeah, it's The Musculoskeletal Mystery. And yeah, I loved reading the book. So thank you for writing such a brilliant book.
Thank you for reading it.
And for the final bonus question of season four, Ingrid, what change do you want to see to make the world a better place for the next generation?
I think based on all the different things we just talked about, you can see that, you know, education is such an important thing to me, because I feel if you have people who are educated about things, they can make informed decisions. They can think about what that information means. They can talk to people. I think in the day and age of electronics, as much as we've gotten benefit from it, there's also some drawback in that people don't necessarily now spend time talking to each other. They assume things. You're on this side, I'm on that side. It doesn't matter. It's across the board with everything. So instead, what I'd like to really see is that education really improves across the board for everybody. Empowerment, that if you have learned something, try to share that with someone else, and in a kind way. Maybe that person doesn't want to, they're not ready for it, they don't want to accept it. That's okay. That's all right too, to understand that not everybody thinks the same as you. We talked about introverted, extroverted. We've actually talked about a lot of opposites today, interestingly enough, I just realized. But isn't that wonderful? There are all these opposites, and yet we can still see commonality between them. So I really would like the next generation to see that there are lots of opposites. There are lots of maybe differences. There are lots of same. But if we all can try to understand each other, things will be so much better, so much smoother. We won't worry so much about, this is my point. It's more like, well, I understand it this way. How do you understand it? Oh, we have middle ground here, right? So I really hope the next generation can see that. And I so hope things like, you know, we may go back to the book again, people understanding what their bodies mean, what they do, what it relates to, what can they ask? Oh, I can help someone else, not just myself. Like, the book stands for that, really, on my scale as a pelvic PT. It comes from my heart that way. But really, I think there are tons of life lessons. Those pearls in there are life lessons. Take care of yourself, right? That kind of thing. They're all in there. So I really hope the next generation can start looking at how do we talk to each other better, not talk at each other.
I love that. And I think I'm actually so glad we connected on LinkedIn, because I think everything that you've just said is everything that I stand for as well. And, you know, that I tried to do with the podcast is education to allow people to be empowered about their bodies, but also themselves, and therefore make informed consent about the decisions that they're making, because you have that information. And therefore, if you know what is going on with your body, you can make decisions about your body and about your life. So I love that answer. I think that's so great. And I hope the tide is changing for the next generation. I hope, you know, books like yours and discussions like this allow people to have more education around their bodies and themselves. And we can change the world, which is your life goal. And I hope we can do that.
Oh, well, I think you're helping that move along a lot.
Oh, thank you so much. And thank you so much, Ingrid, for coming on the podcast. I've loved chatting to you. I hope all the listeners have enjoyed it too. I'm sure they have. It's been such a great conversation, and we've covered so many topics. You're right. That was definitely unexpected, but something I love about the podcast is that we just talk about anything. So thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for writing such a brilliant book. And I hope we stay in touch in the future.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I really, really appreciate it. I enjoyed the conversation immensely.
Great. I'm so happy that you came on the podcast. And thank you so much. Bye.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed recording it. Next week, I am back interviewing another inspirational woman. Her profile will be revealed on the podcast Instagram this upcoming week, so stay tuned. Our Instagram handle is virago_voices. As always, if you have any questions about anything that this episode has covered, please DM the Instagram or tag us in your stories. I will endeavour to answer your questions on the next episode. Also, give Ingrid a follow. She's on LinkedIn and Instagram, and all the information is in the description of this podcast. And if you're interested in what we were discussing, please make sure to check out her book too. Thank you for tuning in. If you like this episode, please consider sharing it on your social media or with a friend. Remember to subscribe on whatever platform you're listening on, and leave a review if you have a minute. Thank you, and see you all next week. Bye.